Mrs. Carney passed by these two young men and went to the edge of the screen to view the house. The seats were being filled up rapidly, and a pleasant noise circulated in the auditorium. She came back and spoke to her husband privately. Their conversation was evidently about Kathleen, for they both glanced at her often as she stood chatting to one of her nationalist friends, Miss Healy, the contralto. An unknown, solitary woman with a pale face walked through the room. The women followed with keen eyes the faded blue dress which was stretched upon a meagre body. Someone said that she was Madame Glynn, the soprano.
"I wonder, where did they dig her up?" said Kathleen to Miss Healy. "I'm sure I never heard of her."
Miss Healy had to smile. Mr. Houlihan limped into the dressing room at that moment, and the two young ladies asked him who was the unknown woman. Mr. Houlihan said that she was Madame Glynn from London. Madame Glynn took her stand in a corner of the room, holding a roll of music stiffly before her and from time to time changing the direction of her startled gaze. The shadow took her faded dress into shelter but fell revengefully into the little cup behind her collarbone. The noise of the hall became more audible. The first tenor and the baritone arrived together. They were both well-dressed, stout and complacent, and they brought a breath of opulence among the company. Mrs. Carney brought her daughter over to them and talked to them amiably. She wanted to be on good terms with them, but while she strove to be polite, her eyes followed Mr. Houlihan in his limping and devious courses. As soon as she could, she excused herself and went out after him. "Mr. Houlihan, I want to speak to you for a moment," she said. They went down to a discreet part of the corridor. Mrs. Carney asked him when was her daughter going to be paid. Mr. Houlihan said that Mr. Fitzpatrick had charge of that. Mrs. Carney said that she didn't know anything about Mr. Fitzpatrick. Her daughter had signed a contract for 8 guineas, and she would have to be paid. Mr. Houlihan said that it wasn't his business. "Why isn't it your business?" asked Mrs. Carney. "Didn't you yourself bring her the contract? Anyway, if it's not your business, it's my business, and I mean to see to it." "You'd better speak to Mr. Fitzpatrick," said Mr. Houlihan distantly.
"I don't know anything about Mr. Fitzpatrick," repeated Mrs. Carney. "I have my contract, and I intend to see that it is carried out."
When she came back to the dressing room, her cheeks were slightly suffused. The room was lively. Two men in outdoor dress had taken possession of the fireplace and were chatting familiarly with Miss Healy and the baritone. They were the Freeman man and Mr. O'Madden Burke. The Freeman man had come in to say that he could not wait for the concert, as he had to report the lecture which an American priest was giving in the Mansion House. He said they were to leave the report for him at the Freeman office, and he would see that it went in. He was a grey-haired man with a plausible voice and careful manners. He held an extinguished cigar in his hand, and the aroma of cigar smoke floated near him. He had not intended to stay a moment because concerts and artistes bored him considerably, but he remained leaning against the mantelpiece. Miss Healy stood in front of him, talking and laughing. He was old enough to suspect one reason for her politeness, but young enough in spirit to turn the moment to account. The warmth, fragrance, and colour of her body appealed to his senses. He was pleasantly conscious that the bosom which he saw rise and fall slowly beneath him rose and fell at that moment for him, that the laughter and fragrance and wilful glances were his tribute. When he could stay no longer, he took leave of her regretfully.
"O'Madden Burke will write the notice," he explained to Mr. Houlihan, "and I'll see it in."
"Thank you very much, Mr. Hendrick," said Mr. Houlihan. "You'll see it in, I know. Now, won't you have a little something before you go?"
"I don't mind," said Mr. Hendrick.
The two men went along some tortuous passages and up a dark staircase and came to a secluded room where one of the stewards was uncorking bottles for a few gentlemen. One of these gentlemen was Mr. O'Madden Burke, who had found out the room by instinct.
He was a suave, elderly man who balanced his imposing body, when at rest, upon a large silk umbrella. His magniloquent Western name was the moral umbrella upon which he balanced the fine problem of his finances. He was widely respected.
While Mr. Houlihan was entertaining the Freeman man, Mrs. Kearney was speaking so animatedly to her husband that he had to ask her to lower her voice. The conversation of the others in the dressing room had become strained. Mr. Bell, the first item, stood ready with his music, but the accompanist made no sign. Evidently something was wrong. Mr. Kearney looked straight before him, stroking his beard, while Mrs. Kearney spoke into Kathleen's ear with subdued emphasis. From the hall came sounds of encouragement, clapping and stamping of feet. The first tenor and the baritone and Miss Healy stood together, waiting tranquilly, but Mr. Bell's nerves were greatly agitated because he was afraid the audience would think that he had come late.
Mr. Houlihan and Mr. O'Madden Burke came into the room. In a moment, Mr. Houlihan perceived the hush. He went over to Mrs. Kearney and spoke with her earnestly. While they were speaking, the noise in the hall grew louder. Mr. Houlihan became very red and excited. He spoke volubly, but Mrs. Kearney said curtly at intervals,
"She won't go on. She must get her 8 guineas.
Mr. Houlihan pointed desperately towards the hall where the audience was clapping and stamping. He appealed to Mr. Kearney and to Kathleen. But Mr. Kearney continued to stroke his beard, and Kathleen looked down, moving the point of her new shoe.
"It was not her fault," Mrs. Kearney repeated. "She won't go on without her money."
After a swift struggle of tongues, Mr. Houlihan hobbled out in haste. The room was silent. When the strain of the silence had become somewhat painful, Miss Healy said to the baritone,
"Have you seen Mrs. Pat Campbell this week?"
The baritone had not seen her, but he had been told that she was very fine. The conversation went no further. The first tenor bent his head and began to count the links of the gold chain which was extended across his waist, smiling and humming random notes to observe the effect on the frontal sinus. From time to time, everyone glanced at Mrs. Kearney. The noise in the auditorium had risen to a clamour when Mr. Fitzpatrick burst into the room, followed by Mr. Houlihan, who was panting. The clapping and stamping in the hall were punctuated by whistling. Mr. Fitzpatrick held a few banknotes in his hand. He counted out 4 into Mrs. Kearney's hand and said she would get the other half at the interval. Mrs. Kearney said,
"This is 4 shillings short."
But Kathleen gathered in her skirt and said, "Now, Mr. Bell," to the first item, who was shaking like an aspen. The singer and the accompanist went out together. The noise in the hall died away. There was a pause of a few seconds, and then the piano was heard. The first part of the concert was very successful, except for Madame Glynn's item. The poor lady sang Killarney in a bodiless, gasping voice, with all the old-fashioned mannerisms of intonation and pronunciation which she believed lent elegance to her singing. She looked as if she had been resurrected from an old stage wardrobe, and the cheaper parts of the hall made fun of her high, wailing notes. The first tenor and the contralto, however, brought down the house. Kathleen played a selection of Irish airs, which was generously applauded. The first part closed with a stirring patriotic recitation delivered by a young lady who arranged amateur theatricals. It was deservedly applauded, and when it was ended, the men went out for the interval, content. All this time the dressing room was a hive of excitement. In one corner were Mr. Houlihan, Mr. Fitzpatrick, Miss Byrne, 2 of the stewards, the baritone, the bass, and Mr. O'Madden Burke. Mr. O'Madden Burke said it was the most
scandalous exhibition he had ever witnessed. Miss Kathleen Kearney's musical career was ended in Dublin after that, he said.
The baritone was asked what did he think of Mrs. Kearney's conduct. He did not like to say anything. He had been paid his money and wished to be at peace with men. However, he said that Mrs. Kearney might have taken the artistes into consideration. The stewards and the secretaries debated hotly as to what should be done when the interval came.
I agree with Miss Byrne, said Mr. O'Madden Burke. Pay her
nothing.
In another corner of the room were Mrs. Kearney and her husband, Mr. Bell, Miss Healy, and the young lady who had recited the patriotic piece. Mrs. Kearney said that the committee had treated her scandalously. She had spared neither trouble nor expense, and this was how she was repaid. They thought they had only a girl to deal with, and that therefore they could ride roughshod over her, but she would show them their mistake. They wouldn't have dared to have treated her like that if she had been a man. But she would see that her daughter got her rights. She wouldn't be fooled. If they didn't pay her to the last farthing, she would make Dublin ring. Of course she was sorry for the sake of the artistes, but what else could she do? She appealed to the second tenor, who said he thought she had not been well treated. Then she appealed to Miss Healy. Miss Healy wanted to join the other group, but she did not like to do so because she was a great friend of Kathleen's and the Kearneys had often invited her to their house. As soon as the first part was ended, Mr. Fitzpatrick and Mr. Houlihan went over to Mrs. Kearney and told her that the other 4 guineas would be paid after the committee meeting on the following Tuesday, and that in case her daughter did not play for the second part, the committee would consider the contract broken and would pay nothing.
I haven't seen any committee, said Mrs. Kearney angrily. My daughter has her contract. She will get £4.8 into her hand, or a foot she won't put on that platform.
I'm surprised at you, Mrs. Kearney, said Mr. Houlihan. I never thought you would treat us this way.
And what way did you treat me? Asked Mrs. Kearney. Her face was inundated with an angry colour, and she looked as if she would attack someone with her hands.
I'm asking for my rights, she said. You might have some sense of decency, said Mr. Houlihan.
Might I, indeed? And when I ask when my daughter is going to be paid, I can't get a civil answer. She tossed her head and assumed a haughty voice.
You must speak to the secretary. It's not my business. I'm a great fellow. Fal de diddle I do.
Oh, I thought you were a lady, said Mr. Houlihan, walking away from her abruptly.
After that, Mrs. Kearney's conduct was condemned on all hands. Everyone approved of what the committee had done. She stood at the door, haggard with rage, arguing with her husband and daughter, gesticulating with them. She waited until it was time for the second part to begin in the hope that the secretaries would approach her, but Miss Healy had kindly consented to play one or two accompaniments. Mrs. Kearney had to stand aside to allow the baritone and his accompanist to pass up to the platform. She stood still for an instant, like an angry stone image, and when the first notes of the song struck her ear, she caught up her daughter's cloak and said to her husband, "Get a cab!" He went out at once. Mrs. Kearney wrapped the cloak round her daughter and followed him. As she passed through the doorway, she stopped and glared into Mr. Houlihan's face. "I'm not done with you yet," she said.
"But I'm done with you," said Mr. Houlihan.
Kathleen followed her mother meekly. Mr. Houlihan began to pace up and down the room in order to cool himself, for he felt his skin on fire.
"That's a nice lady," he said. "Oh, she's a nice lady."
"You did the proper thing, Houlihan,"
said Mr. O'Madden Burke, poised upon his umbrella in approval.